Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available. Come get some.
Beware, I live. IGN GameScoop. Welcome back to GameScoop, everybody. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. This is Greg Miller. Say something, so...
Hey, I was smiling as hard as I could. I want it on the record, I put my feet on the table first, but then just like everything in my career, Colin Moriarty copied me immediately following.
That is Colin Moriarty, and the last copier is Justin Davis.
We have a very casual feet on the table
game. Look at this,
today.
He's got trunks for legs,
He's been doing couples yoga. That's what couples yoga
is. That's true, hot yoga.
No, not doing
it. I keep saying it's hot, because it sounds hot.
It is kind of hot, but it's not the actual hot yoga.
You guys are all nudie patootie like?
My friends.
Your house, during your company, your
my
home.
Friends. Our friend, Bruno Carrillo, in Sao Paulo, Brazil.
That's good.
Is worried about the video game industry.
Okay.
He says, "Hi Damon and IGN editors, guests of today's GameScoop. The recent layoffs at EA made me think something. EA is one of the most powerful and richest gaming companies in the world, and this recent layoffs, plus the CEO one, he means John Riccitiello, stepping down, shows that things are not good for them. If you think of all the studios that closed last year, huge publishers like Square Enix that are having problems, and the recent need to charge extra for everything like tons of DLC and online passes, is this all the big warning of an imminent collapse in the industry as we know it, or are we already in crisis? Suddenly, for some reason, it looks like making games is not profitable enough to keep companies alive anymore. Do you guys know what is happening and why? So, is the video game industry in crisis?"
No.
Yes.
No way.
Tiebreaker.
No, it's not in the press.
So yay!
Here's the deal. Here's what normally happens on GameScoop. I say my piece, and then Colin sits here, quiet, very like a hibernating bear, and then you say, "Yeah, I'm gonna tell you why you're wrong," and then you fold out some sheet of paper,
oh,
and then
like
you
this do. One?
I want Colin to go first.
All right, okay. I'll go first.
Okay.
So, I have some statistics here, but. The game industry is in flux right now. It's not in crisis at all. A lot of people are like, is this 1982, 1983 again? You have to understand what happened in 1983. What happened in 1983 was very specific, right? It was companies that had nothing to do with games, and some game companies getting in, making lots of shitty games to make lots of money or whatever. I mean, even Quaker Oats had a gaming division. So there was an inundation, a glut of terrible games that were out there, and game prices didn't collapse along with the quality of games, and thus there was a crash and kind of a reimagining of what video games would be with Nintendo when the NES came out. Well, Famicom first, and then the NES.
The Master System.
And of course, the Sega Master System.
Yeah.
It's really not, like, the 1983 crash is really not as complex as people make it out to be. It really is a quality issue. What's happening now is that games are too expensive to make. And so, with everyone kind of competing with budgets and things of this nature, the budget of games go up and up. And we were talking a lot about Square Enix. He talked about Square Enix, where a game like Sleeping Dogs that sold almost 2 million copies isn't profitable, which is horrifying. But even worse is Tomb Raider, which sold 4 or 5 million copies.
3.5.
Yeah, but I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, 3.5 in the first 3 weeks.
Right. Yeah, and it's up almost to where they expected it to be, and yet they expected it to be like somewhere in the 5 to 6 million range in the first month, and therefore isn't profitable. Now, that's a budgetary issue. That's not a game's not doing well issue. If a game sells, Greg and I talk about it all the time, if Sony had a game that sold, because they don't have many of them that sell this well, that sold 4 or 5 million copies, they'd be ecstatic to get a game to sell like
almost
that.
How much did God of War Ascension sell?
Well, the rumor is like 330,000 copies.
Sure, but they're not selling to... They'd be ecstatic because they're only selling on one platform instead of two or three.
Yeah, but they only have like really two games this generation that have sold that much.
Yeah.
Period. God of War 3 and Gran Turismo 5.
Sure, but they're selling to less than half as many people.
Sure.
Okay,
but
that's all.
But the number is much, much lower.
Yeah, but let me
shut up. You said you're
But let me break out my stats. Now, here's the interesting thing that I think is that the curve is actually up in terms of console sales, in terms of hardware sales. And that's a good sign, not only for this generation, but for next generation. And I just grabbed some numbers that I thought were interesting. NES and Master System sold 71.9 million units, right?
What, combined?
Combined. SNES and Genesis sold 89.1 million units. N64, Saturn, and PlayStation, 144.8 million. Saturn, PlayStation 2, GameCube, and Xbox, 200 million. 360, PlayStation 3, and Wii, 252 million. Going up like this. Not to mention the fact that 360 and PS3 are both selling a couple hundred thousand each every month in the United States alone, 7 and 8 years after they came out. The Wii U is obviously doing abysmally, but we can't extrapolate information from that based on next generation consoles until the PS4 and the 720 come out. So I guess what I'm saying is that hardware is selling, games are selling, but the budgets are is the core of the problem right now, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's a gigantic problem.
But people need to be more realistic. The industry's not crashing. The industry's not in trouble. Everything's going to readjust. The canary in the coal mine is THQ. By the way,
what's that?
The canary in the coal mine is THQ.
But that's what it costs to make a game these days.
Like, no, it doesn't.
You have to have
voice
acting and motion capture, and you know art assets are like a tremendous investment.
It absolutely doesn't have to cost that much.
You need an army of artists to like make make the environments that are in a modern game these days.
Let me ask you a question.
All right. Okay.
If it really needed to cost that much money, right? We have a student, Naughty Dog, right? Naughty Dog makes a game every 2 years. Their games sell 2 to 3 million copies each. Uncharted 3 is probably the best selling of the Uncharted games, but these are games that sell a few million copies. Probably would sell much more than that. These games are profitable. Naughty Dog is considered the crown jewel of Sony's studio. These games have unparalleled production values, unparalleled voice acting, unparalleled graphics. Those games sell 2 to 3 million copies and are profitable. So a game doesn't need to cost that much to be profitable, period.
I think with Tomb Raider, I think that marketing budget was very bloated.
It went the home front way of we're going to get it everywhere in front of everyone.
Tomb Raider is everywhere, and that copies. I think that was a large.
Sure.
I mean, I think a company.
I'm going to hibernate now.
Okay. I think a company like Naughty Dog is the exception, not the rule. I think the AAA games business is in big trouble.
All right, so lay it on us. Lay on your argument now.
So I am not as prepared as Colin Moriarty. I'm going to let you know right now. I don't have some secret statistical, thing that I'm going to.
Mr. Weatherby talking about Jughead's up here.
That's pretty true. I mean, I think the talk that I had at GDC, I had lots of meetings, mostly with mobile game developers. So maybe they're not super unbiased when it comes to talking about the console space. The thing that strikes me is you have a game like Tomb Raider that they did, Tomb Raider or Sleeping Dogs or, lots of these games that underperformed. These are games that did everything right. So critics like the game a lot. Gamers like the game a lot. They were marketed well. Tomb Raider had a few, sort of weird pieces of press. But generally, like that marketing campaign was impeccable. Everything from top to bottom was impeccable. And the game sold pretty well. And it's losing a tremendous amount of money. Like, when that's happening, there should be fucking sirens going off in your head. That's when the klaxon starts sounding, where it's like, you did everything right, and your game still lost money. That, to me, is a sign that the market is going away. Like, that market is not there
anymore. To me, that's a sign of stupid people. I think of for people out there, think of the games industry as the ocean. The ocean isn't going anywhere, but the tides roll in, and it looks awesome, and then they recede and come back, and then back and forth like this. It's always ebbing
like
and flowing. Like this. A lot of people don't know what the ocean is. They live in Iowa. They're like, ah! But
we know what the ocean is.
You go to Florida, you're freaking out. No, but you were talking about like that. Sirens should be going off for the people who made that game and made the marketing budget and totally overestimated what the video game market
is.
It's
like you can't. So it's like you have an old established brand like Tomb Raider. It loses money. You make a new IP like Sleeping Dogs. It loses money. People are tired of the existing franchises like Gears of War and God of War. They lose money. Like, you can't win.
No,
and
you can't.
Clash of Clans.
And Clash of Clans makes $1 million a day.
I think it's more than that. I think it's more like $2.5 million a day. Supercell, the developer of Clash of Clans.
Yeah, yeah.
We're missing, I think, an important piece of context, though. And I'm not saying you're wrong in the sense that, like, the game. See, I look at the industry as it's a whole, right? And, like, the handheld market in terms of iOS and Android and all that stuff is obviously doing really well. There are a million games out there no one gives a shit about, no one ever heard of, people lose money, those studios close down, you never hear about that. Now, a company, so that's like one piece of the puzzle. Another thing with Square Enix, specifically about Square Enix, is that it's not clear if the numbers for Crystal Dynamics and Tomb Raider or United Front Games and Sleeping Dogs was specifically pertaining to those games. That was what Square Enix, a publicly traded company, expected to make on those games. So we don't know if those games were actually profitable or not. That's unclear. And Square Enix makes awful decisions with its own properties that put it in the red, and then these games are expected to bring it back in the black. So these are important pieces of context that we're missing that we don't know. We're not in the shareholders meetings. We're not in the board meetings with Square Enix. That company's in a lot of trouble. Square Enix is in a lot of trouble.
I think these examples are examples of mismanagement.
Right, exactly.
We're talking about specific companies. exactly. industry.
Like, look at Activision. Activision's doing fine.
I mean, sort of, but like, you know, I feel like people have Call of Duty fatigue. You know, they ran music games into the ground real quick. They ran Tony Hawk into the ground. They have World of Warcraft and they have Call of Duty and they have Skylanders. Like, that's, I mean, Activision.
How many phenomenally successful franchises does a company need?
Yeah, all they need is one of those.
That's true.
I mean, and understand too that when Prototype 2 came out and they shut that studio down, that game was probably actually profitable. Activision is such a company that studies the numbers, that's actually really smart, whether you know you disparage them, whether or not people like them or not, that they got rid of that franchise and that developer because they were like, well, you're not making enough money. These guys aren't stupid over there. See, that's the difference between, and I'm not saying the people necessarily running Square Enix are stupid, but that's the difference between a company with some foresight and a company that makes bad Final Fantasy games that no one wants and then has these Western developers and Western publishers. Deus Ex is another great example of a game that did actually really well that is saving them from the red that their own games are making them. The Square Enix situation in particular is a very complicated issue, just like the THQ issue was, because, you know, Volition and Saints Row was a massively popular and massively profitable game, except for the fact that UDraw was actually the reason that THQ started to tank. Yeah. So it didn't matter how well something else did if everything else wasn't going
right.
But
it's like, if you can have one bad decision and then it blows up your whole company, that means you're in a very precarious position to begin with.
There's like, no doubt about that, but we can't extrapolate that to the entire industry.
What happens to Activision, like World of Warcraft subs are dipping, you know, what happens to Activision if Call of Duty, just people are like, we're kind of over it?
They figure something else out.
I mean, maybe, but they're also a company, like, why be in that business? Like, that's a bad business, like, it's a dangerous, what? Like, it's a roll of the dice every single time you make a $50 million game.
They had the most popular video game in the world for 10 years running. I think they did okay.
Like, Activision's
doing
great.
You're talking about the future problem.
I'm not arguing that Activision's not doing great, but again, like, you can point to a couple companies and say, the biggest company in video games is making a lot of money. It's like,
Activision
shit.
And EA is struggling recently. But again, I think it's because of mismanagement.
Some AAA games are going to continue to be fine. You know, Grand Theft Auto is going to sell, you know, however many copies it sells, 12 million copies. But like anything below that AAA, there is not going to be A games anymore. Like, that's done. Those days are over.
And now there's a huge pool of amazing, you know, independent games, you know, small indie games. There's interesting games released on iOS every single day.
I guess that means it depends on what we talk about. Like, I kickstart a lot of stuff, a lot of really interesting, weird, experimental games. And I hear, you know, I met with, how many developers did I meet with at GDC? Over 30 that are making mobile games over and over and over again. They're like, I used to work for Volition. I used to work for whoever. You know, I would work on, like, cave textures for, like, 2 years and the game would come out. Like, it wasn't fulfilling me creatively. And now they're in charge of their own destiny making mobile games. I think that's cool.
That's very healthy.
That's cool. Like, that's cool for them professionally. That's cool for me. Like, that's what I'm into as a gamer. But if you're into really big experiences, I don't think there's going to be that many of them.
I mean, I think there are. I mean, as Colin, you know, will, I think he'll agree with me on this. There is a demand for big AAA experiences. Yeah. Our society is built on supply and demand.
So. I don't think there's enough demand to meet the number of them that are released.
But
right
that's
now.
Why you just have to set your goals. People are setting the goalposts too far away, and
that's
then
it,
they fall, and that's why the companies are in trouble.
You could have saved Square Enix so much trouble. Will Tomb Raider sell 6 million copies in a month?
Nope.
No. No way.
No, I mean, I could have told him that.
A lot of things you're talking about, I feel like you're talking about it in a light switch way, right? And the fact that, what if the Call of Duty fatigue sets in and it doesn't sell? It won't be, it goes from the most popular game to not being sold at all. There's decreases. Just like there needs to be a ramp up in increases.
Sure.
Like, you can't come out of hibernation with Tomb Raider and be like, we're putting all the money into marketing. People love Lara Croft. It's going to be great. No, they should have, if they were worried about numbers and how this is, start small, have a huge hit, build up a little bit more, build up a little bit more. It's like Uncharted, right?
But it's
Uncharted
so 3 expensive had this to make those games.
Subway and all this other crap. I know.
It is expensive, but just keep your costs in check.
Yeah.
It's like all budget. It's all SimCity.
How many big AAA movies are released a year? Like, big tentpole summer movies?
Lots of them.
Yeah, and like, but like, there's a lot, but like, not that, like, you can count them. Like, we could name them all, but there's so many, like, big bet games. There's way too many big bet games, I think.
I think they're pretty similar. As games become more and more cinematic, I think the industry will look a lot like the movie industry, where there's a healthy release schedule of blockbuster titles and smaller independent films. I mean, they have small budgets and they don't make as much as the box office, but it's okay because they didn't cost that much to make.
I agree, but my point is that there's not. I agree that the games industry is going to look more like the movie industry, but I don't see there being that many big blockbuster movies every year. Like, each company has like a couple, and that's That's their bets.
We're going to talk about that in a second. We're going to see you're wrong.
I don't know, I just don't think we're looking at it the right way. I mean, the numbers are very clear in terms of hardware. Gaming is getting bigger and bigger and bigger and in more homes and more homes.
No one's making any money.
No, that's not true. That's not true. I mean, that's simply not true. The fact is that, and I think it's a little bit hypocritical to say like, well, yeah, Sony shut down Sony Liverpool and Big and all these, and you know, THQ's, you know, shitting the bed. How many literally thousands of iOS developers have just disappeared out of nowhere because no one cares about their games? It is the same thing. And when I went to, it's just on a smaller scale because the investment is smaller. Mm-hmm. It's really the same principle. And when I went to GDC and I was at, you know, a few panels, I went to a Vita panel in particular, and the interesting thing they were talking about is, yeah, Vita might have sold 5 million units. It's not doing very well. These guys are making lots of money on the Vita. Because there is a dedicated, they're like, we can make much more money putting Guacamelee on Vita than we can put Guacamelee on iOS. Because not only is it unplayable on iOS, and those games will always be unplayable on a touchscreen, but that we have a more dedicated fan base that will play more for their games, and they're looking for content, and it's not saturated. Okay. Their problem is the exact opposite, that even though there's not a lot of handhelds out there, that there's not a lot of games, and so they're able to make more money because of the saturation point. That will always be iOS's Achilles heel until they figure that out. And for every success story, for every... You know, I don't even know any of these, really a lot of these games. Yeah, Rovio or all these other studios. You know, for every success story, there are 1,000 studios that just disappear. And you read about them all the time. And when I say 1,000, I'm being pretty literal because these guys are making games in their bedrooms or in their houses.
Just a guy, like, I want to make iOS games.
Yeah, and then he puts it out and no one buys it, and that's the end of that. But you don't hear those kinds of stories. I think it's because there's more monetary investment. I think Justin's right in the sense that there's a lot of, it's a situation, it's in flux. But I'm distressed by the fact that people think hardware, you know, well, consoles are dying specifically based on Wii U's performance, which I really think is like what a lot of people are kind of pulling out the last few months, that Wii U is tanking. But we'll really know what Justin's saying is true or not in about a year or so. If the PS4 and the 720 don't each sell extraordinarily well when they come out, which is entirely possible, then we'll know that gaming as we know it is in decline and things are shifting. But people are always going to want to play games.
Yeah, I do want to say, you know, I stand by my statements, but the caveat would be, like, we haven't seen a console generation go on this long. So it's like, you know, that could be a big part of why things look the way that they look today. And maybe, you know, 12 months from now, things will look very different.
But I'm sorry, I know you probably want to move on, but I was just going to say, too, like, that's true. That's bad for publishers, but it's actually really good for hardware manufacturers because PS3 and Xbox 360 are nothing but profit right now. And that they're selling hundreds of thousands of these a month just to people that still don't have them with install bases of like 77 million PlayStation 3s already out there. That's getting close to PS1 numbers. PS1's considered a huge success. You know, there's a great software attach rate on PlayStation and Xbox. The reason I think God of War Ascension and Gears of War Judgment didn't do well are because these are two games that aren't numerical sequels.
They're a symptom of the generation going on so long.
Even though God of War Ascension sold a third as much as God of War 3, you know, 3 years ago in the same period of time, it's because it's an online multiplayer game. Not, you know, people are kind of waiting. I think we just don't have all the information yet, too, to kind of like put the RIP fucking tombstone, in the ground for console gaming. You know,
most of us, the three of us, 75% of us seem to agree that Crysis is maybe a little exaggerated. That maybe the industry is in flux. It's definitely changing, but. I think you guys will agree that we still see a lot of health in the industry.
Yeah, we just see, I mean, Tomb Raider is not the only, like, great game that sold well that then the company went bankrupt. Like, there's lots of examples over the last 12
years. THQ is a great example. Like I said, with Saints Row and Homefront, which was another profitable game.
That's true.
But bad decisions, like Damon was saying, doomed that company no matter how well those games did. Yeah. And that's the troubling part of it. And I really just think that we need more evidence. But I also, I'm telling you, man, like, the hardware is still selling. People still want these games. And publishers and especially developers still need to figure out new ways to make money. And that's what he was kind of alluding to in his letter there, where it's like, online passes are not so they really can make money, they're so to stop used game sales.
Yeah,
but the microtransactions in the games like Dead Space 3 actually did extraordinarily well, even though everyone's complaining about them, so that was a vocal minority.
Yeah,
and really,
those
things actually sold and did really well with very little overhead. So they'll figure out new ways.
It's right that's another ebb and flow of the industry, right? That you hire people as you ramp up to launch a game, you launch the game, and you lay them off. Like, people know that, and they get turnover. Now, granted, I know with LucasArts and blah, 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 the companies that are getting wiped out, different story. But every time you hear that so-and-so developer is laid off X percent, it's not that they're going away. It's that their project's done. Now they need to get into pre-production on the next thing.
Okay. Now it's time for this segment's surprise topic. Summer movie preview.
Oh!
We got the whole issue. We have the list here. Let's go through.
Let me see the Superman stuff. I haven't seen the Superman stuff.
Well, let's look. Maybe I'll read it after GameScoop.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, we're going to go through the big releases of the summer, and we'll give it a yay or a nay or a scoop or no scoop or
something.
Okay,
scoop or no scoop.
Obviously, we can start with the first
two
one.
Two scoops.
The new trailer for Man of Steel is out recently. You're excited about this one.
Yeah,
we're gonna give this one.
Scoop.
Have you noticed? This is a still from the trailer here. What's Superman wearing on his shirt there?
He's in the Kansas Jayhawks. That's where it's Smallville, Kansas.
I thought the asteroid crashed in Missouri.
No, you made up that. Yeah, that's what you made up for statistics. Here's something I proposed to the GameScoop audience that I find interesting. At no point have we seen or heard anything about bespectacled Clark Kent working at
being
the Daily
a
Planet.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's the final shot.
Apparently,
going
they're
the Daily
like
Planet pushing
not,
it.
They might not even call him Superman in the movie, right? In the trailer, they show that she's like, why don't we call you? She doesn't even say it, right?
So I don't know. I think that's some clever editing. He'll be Maybe. Superman, I think, in the
okay.
movie.
Great Gatsby.
No, thanks.
Don't know about that one. Iron Man 3 is coming out very soon.
Scoop.
Yeah, you're into that one?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm kind of.
I didn't like Iron Man 2, but Avengers is great.
Well, yeah, but it's not the same. It's not Joss Whedon.
I know. I'm aware.
It is the guy who wrote Lethal Weapon and Monster Squad.
Oh, Monster Squad,
that going for it. Star Trek Into Darkness.
Yeah, love the first one.
I'd say big but like Benedict Cumberbatch a lot.
Yeah.
Ooh, Sherlock.
That is.
Sherlock, yeah.
Okay.
Here we go. Did you say yes or no to Star Trek?
I don't really care about any of these movies. So
Can I just say that Benedict...
Red Dawn 2 coming out.
He just gets up, yanks the mic, and
Benedict Cumberbatch is probably the coolest name.
Yeah, that's a really cool name.
Good. The Hangover Part 3 is coming.
No.
We don't need
Even though I did eventually see on cable Hangover 2, and it was good.
No,
I laughed.
It's
I had
not.
Fun.
Really?
I had fun. It was a dumb movie. What did you expect? I mean, I wasn't going in expecting Citizen Kane.
Fast and Furious.
Yes.
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 I've never seen the Fast and Furious.
I can get down with that.
Are we having that marathon?
We are going to fix that.
Yeah, we're going to have a marathon of all.
We're doing that. There's apparently a comedy called The Heat with Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy.
Absolutely not.
No. Stop. Sandra Bullock is the worst.
The worst?
Melissa.
Yeah, she's the worst.
Everybody likes Melissa?
Yeah, like her. Yeah. So just give her her own movie.
Why do you hate Sandra Bullock so much?
She's not funny.
Wildcat speed, then she's wearing the jacket, and that's when he finds out that he's got the camera and the thing. He's calling her Wildcat.
Oh, okay.
White House Down coming from Roland Emmerich.
Sounds
Don't
good.
Know about that
apparently
one.
They yeah. Apparently they terrorists take over the White House. And
what was the other one?
Why would they take over the White
Olympus
House?
Has fallen.
Olympus has fallen.
Yeah, why would they take over? They're very similar movies.
Why would they? See that doesn't make any sense.
Will Smith has After Earth.
Yeah,
with his son.
Got that Gary Whitta.
Gary Whitta wrote that. M. Night Shyamalan.
Jaden Smith, who was in The Karate Kid.
Yeah.
Ooh, it's M. Night Shyamalan.
And Gary Whitta.
I love
he
him.
Does
Gary
not
Whitta.
Make. You love him?
The first four movies he did were awesome.
He didn't write this one. Like he's just directing it.
Dude, but Sixth Sense and. Signs, yeah, The Village, and Unbreakable. Those are awesome.
Unbreakable.
I
like the old one.
I like the old one.
What about Airbender, though? Nope.
I can't get behind that.
Of course.
What's the wind one with Marky Mark? Remember
Nature? Yeah. Oh, it's happening. The Happening. It's happening.
It's happening.
A sequel to What's Happening.
This is the End is obviously going to be the funniest. You guys don't even know.
No, yeah, I do. The one
Seth Rogen, James Franco, Jonah Hill, Danny McBride, all those guys.
Gonna be great.
God, it looks so funny. World War Z with Brad Pitt.
Yes.
That movie was in hell for a while.
That's
right?
What I said. I heard the rumors, I mean, they're not like real rumors, but just like Entertainment Weekly rumors were that they had to do a ton of reshoots. Like they reshot like a third of the movie to change the ending all around. It was in flux and it was not going to come out and there's all this drama.
I don't know about it.
I'm still excited for it.
I know. I'm very, like the trailers and everything looks really cool, but I'm skeptical.
I don't like the way the book was written. So it kind of turns out.
I love the book.
Joss Whedon has Much Ado About Nothing. No, you see,
Much Ado About Nothing,
Yeah, he has his own, stylish take on it with Nathan Fillion.
Cool.
There too. You don't like Joss Whedon?
That could be cool.
I like him fine. That's not enough to get me to go see it.
Monsters University. That'll be awesome.
Yeah.
What's your problem?
I'll see it on DVD or digital.
You're going to see it on DVD? When's the last time you saw anything on DVD?
There's a Lone Ranger with Johnny Depp as Tonto. I don't think so. I don't think I'll be seeing them.
Will Johnny Depp play the same character he plays in every single movie that
he's
in?
I think he will.
Yeah, he'll be doing that one. There's Pacific Rim. I'm really excited for Pacific Rim.
Yeah.
I didn't like the MotorStorm game, so I don't see why this would be any different.
It's not going to be the same
Pacific
thing.
Rim looks so good.
PlayStation
there's,
jokes.
There's Wolverine in July.
Yeah.
So I hope Wolverine's good.
Yeah, Wolverine's X-Men Origins sucks, so we'll see how
he finally has blood on his claws.
Yeah.
Is that based on the Raven game?
And I hope. And it's set in Japan, and Japan is the best. Japan is the opposite of Sandra Bullock, basically. There's a Smurfs 2. There's a cartoon called Turbo with a snail.
No.
Let's see here. Oh, there's Red 2. Remember that movie Red with all the old CIA agents?
John
Bruce
Malkovich,
Willis and John Malkovich. They're making a Red 2. Isn't that crazy?
Really?
Yeah. Equalitis.
Now there's Elysium. This is the District 9 guy.
Oh, man. It's going to be
that
so
trailer?
Good. The trailer is incredible, yeah. And District 9 was so good. Yeah. Neil, he still wants to make the Halo
look
movie.
Crazy Matt Damon looks.
I don't think I saw District 9. Was that like kind of the alien take on like the apartheid or whatever?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's really.
I'll
really
loan it
good.
To you. I love it.
Okay. I like that.
Something called The Mortal Instruments. I think it's based on a young adult book. You gotta stop making these young adult books into movies.
They make money though.
Isn't that the sequel to the? That's the one with the talking polar bear, right? Or is that a different one?
No.
There are a lot of movies coming out this summer.
I heard they're
that's
making.
That's what I'm talking about. Speaking. That's like you know, Justin just saying, oh, there aren't many, many blockbusters.
What was the movie you just mentioned? That was the.
There's
adult?
A million of them.
What?
What was the young adult?
The Mortal Instruments.
Oh, okay. I heard that they're making The Giver into a movie.
Yeah.
Which is like.
See, there's another Percy.
Awesome.
There's another
Wake
Percy
Me When
Jackson.
It's the Receiver.
Terrible, terrible. There's another Percy Jackson movie comes out. Make movies for 35-year-old dudes. I think that's
no,
that's the demographic you want to go
35-year-old dudes are too tired to go out and see movies.
That's true.
I'm going to see a movie on Friday. Kick-Ass 2 is coming.
Yeah.
It's going to be really good.
Maybe.
No, it's going to be good.
You're such a hater.
I'm not a hater. I've said I love lots of things.
I will
you
see
hated
maybe.
On.
Most of the big ones. Maybe.
Just roll it up, hit
two of those.
Which ones?
I don't know. I don't know. Just any two of them.
Okay.
Wow. No, I don't know. Really trying hard on the
one about the White House.
Here, huh? No, what do you Man of Steel. Superman gets all hot and modern.
Jesus.
All right.
Pretty good. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. I'm joined now by Scott Lowe, Bobby Amos, and Anthony Gallegos, all three Call of Duty fans, which is appropriate because today we're talking about Call of Duty Ghosts, which was finally announced. We knew it was coming. There were lots of leaks, but today Activision made the official announcement, gave us a live-action teaser trailer, and information like it's coming this year on November 5th, coming to Xbox 360, PS3, PC, and next-gen consoles. No mention of the Wii yet. I want to get your first reactions. Why don't we start with you, Scott?
You know, obviously we heard so much about this game, you know, way before it actually got announced formally. And, you know, the actual teaser trailer, you know, it's live action, so it's not gameplay, which is, of course, always disappointing for fans of the franchise. But as live action trailers go, you know, it was actually pretty effective. Like, it, you know, dropped a number of Easter eggs about, you know, the game and the plot and somehow they're kind of introducing this new sub brand within the Call of Duty franchise, and I liked it a lot. It was like a minute and a half, and you know obviously we're hungry for more. But as it turns out, it's not coming until the Xbox event,
which is May 21st. What were some of those Easter eggs that you mentioned? So I watched the trailer. I'm not a big Call of Duty fan, so when I watched it, it's like, well, here's a bunch of warriors from different cultures, and then. There are the ghosts.
Yeah.
Coming November 5th.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess it was less of like Easter eggs and more kind of raised questions about how it ties into this, you know, kind of the existing franchise and what they're doing with the new sub-brand because, you know, the press release and all of the formal acknowledgement of it really kind of drove the point that this is a whole new franchise. It's like it's not, you know, it's not the same characters, it's not the same story, but, you know, clearly with the presence of the ghost mask, like, you know, that's, you know, Modern Warfare brand kind of character and, like, themes coming into this new kind of sub-franchise. So it'll be interesting to see how they tie back into that. I have a number of theories that I'm, you know, I'm kicking around the head, but, you know, obviously that's, like, highly speculative at this point. Yeah.
What do you think, Bobby?
You know what? Just like Scott said, it was a pretty good teaser trailer and everything, but I'm the guy that plays multiplayer, so
really
want to see some gameplay. I was disappointed that I didn't get a chance to see that. But like you say, just seeing the live action trailer and just putting all the things together, you're just like, okay, starting to get a little excited, but just got to wait to see more from that. But overall, I was happy just that it's announced now, finally.
Feel the same way, Anthony?
They're fighting in the trailer. Well, when it shows all the characters, it's always in the backdrop of like this destroyed city, like a Terminator looking city. So my dream for this game is that they have enough like basically guts to make a game where it's an occupied America thing where you're but not like a home front where it was like very just straight up shooting. You knew who your bad guys were. I want it to be like a game where you're playing as basically like a terrorist, a homegrown terrorist. Basically, they call you terrorist, but you're basically playing
that would
as.
Be, okay.
But I'm saying, but they call you terrorist, but you're playing as a freedom fighter.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like
like they would the material they'd put out, like whoever's occupying this country, you know, whether it's like a fallen America or something like that. They're calling you terrorists, but you're basically fighting for freedom, which is why people know when they see the ghosts, like, you're the good guys. You're the ones who are fighting for us, which kind of flips the whole way that the world is right now on its head, you know. But I mean, who gets called bad things is on the eye of who's doing the calling, right? So it'd be really cool if, like, they took that idea of these ghosts, and that's why they're wearing the mask. That's why they're hiding, because, you know, it's an occupied country, and they have to.
Yeah. So there were, like, subtle hints too, like, you know, in the narrative, where the narrator is talking about, like, the what masks are used for throughout, like, kind of history with these, you know, to like hide your identity, or like rally, like kind of unify like a armed force of some variety, or get support from, you know, the public, like. The just the choice in terms of like emphasis in with regards to this mask and like the thing they kind of zoom in on, you know, what he's saying as he's doing that, like, it almost sort of has this vibe like these aren't, you know, just guys wearing masks. These are like kind of like a Foxian like kind of faction, you know, trying to get the support. They're kind of like rebels or like militia or insurgents, you know,
basically,
potentially.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's the vibe I got from it. And if you actually think, like, think back into the events of Modern Warfare 3, which is like, you know, World War 3 has happened. You know, it's, you know,
there's not necessarily going good for us.
Yeah, and you know, we were invaded. The, you know, the country is
spoilers, man.
I just played this campaign.
Well, maybe you need to play it. It's been two games now. So, but you know, it's like, you know, so the end of Modern Warfare 3. You know, the war is over, but you know, the lines are still being redrawn. Russia had, you know, fully invaded New York and like much of the country. So like, you're looking at like, if this, maybe it's not the same story, maybe it's not the same characters, but if it's the same universe, these, you know, soldiers could be part of like a still occupied part of the United States, where like borders are, and, you know, nations are still being redrawn, because, you know, obviously that's a huge conflict. So I mean, I, you know, just throwing out there as like a wild bet speculation, but I feel like that's what they're really driving for. That just the vibes that it gave off to me.
It'd be really cool for them to deal with themes like people that like go along with it. You know, the people that just are like, sure, invading force, we're with you now, we're following you, we're going to join like the local police. And there's like the idea of like, you're shooting people who used to be Americans and stuff. There's a lot of interesting themes they could do there that Call of Duty doesn't necessarily go. And I think that would be really cool new territory. Also, they're always showing that dog in the background with those dudes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, I love the idea if they do a Call of Duty where it's not like a dogs aren't just like a multiplayer device. That's cool if they are, but like the idea of like maybe having like a constant companion or something like that. That would be really cool. Like,
yeah.
I just see that in all these ideas of what I'd like to see in a Call of Duty game stuck in my head, but it's all speculative.
Yeah.
It's interesting you guys seem concerned with the single player story, but like Bobby was saying, you know, he's mostly interested in multiplayer. I think the vast majority of people, I mean, like, the campaigns are fairly short, right? And then people play multiplayer for a year until the next game comes out. So it's interesting, like, how do you get the vast audience of Call of Duty players out there excited for a game when you're not showing anything about the multiplayer?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few things we do know that can get people excited for the multiplayer. I mean, they did say this is a whole new engine, so it's not, you know, the same engine they've been using for the last, like, you know, 10 years or whatever it's been. Like, it's been a long time since, they've done great things with the engines.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, Black Ops 2 looks incredible considering it's built on what is essentially a framework from, like, 2005. Like, you know, that's, or earlier. So, I mean, it's interesting to see what they do with that, and I think that's going to get people excited for multiplayer because, obviously, you know, better graphics, you know, potentially resolving a lot of, like, some of the technical issues maybe some of the community has had, and of course, just the concept of really kind of progressing forward. But there's also, like, rumors, I don't know if you caught up on this, Bobby, but, like, you know, there was the original YouTuber link where leak, where he was saying that, like, you know, there's going to be new movement mechanics where you can roll around or peek out the sides and sides, like, you know, moving beyond simply the run-and-gun combat of the current franchise. Like, I think, you know, as far as, like, getting people excited now, though, before anything's official, like, I mean, that's the tough part.
Yeah, and we've heard, like, rumors that both the next-gen consoles are going to have, like, share functionality for video stuff and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Like, I have to imagine that that's all planned into Call of Duty, like, continuing to share your own videos and stuff, being able to shoutcast. And just, like, the way that Black Ops 2 has gone with the esports initiative, I have to imagine that, you know, it's easy to assume that this one will definitely take that and grow it even more, taking advantage of what those new consoles
have.
You do Call of Duty commentary
videos. That's what I was going to say. So being a multiplayer, you know, that's what I'm invested in. You're more excited about that type of stuff. So you see the trailer, it's like, okay, that's cool, but feed me the stuff that I want. Whereas, as Scott was saying, a new engine for the next generation, which that's what we've been waiting for. It's one of the things outside the technical issues that we've always complained about. But seeing that new engine and them building upon and adding new things to that, that's when you start getting excited. And then for the podcasts and sharing the videos, you want to see where can you take that on the next platform. And all that stuff is what gets me excited, because I do the commentary. So it's like, how can I, you know, expand upon what I'm doing already with Black Ops 2 on the Xbox 360, where, as with the next console, what is there for me to do? How can I make things better?
Mm. I wonder if that November 5th release date tells us anything about when, like, will that be before the new consoles are out? Just after?
Yeah, I mean, that's been kind of the question, is because, you know, Watch Dogs was just dated, and it's, like, you know, mid-November as well.
19th,
yeah, something like that. Yeah, yeah. So, like, that does raise the question. I mean, there's, you know, obviously there's going to be continued first, you know, current-gen support for these games. Like, games are being developed for both, you know, systems, or, you know, both generations of systems. So, you know, we could interpret that as, yes, those next-gen consoles will be, you know, out before then, or at least at that time, but, you know, who knows? I mean, if you think about it, Call of Duty 2 was a launch title for Xbox 360, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it would be, you know, pretty kind of ceremonial and kind of, like, symbolic for Call of Duty Ghosts to be.
And especially with how much they've, like, grown together. Like, I could easily even see Call of Duty, there being a Call of Duty Ghost launch Xbox or something like that combined, just because Xbox and Activision with the Call of Duty franchise, they are very much in bed together, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it may be a multi-platform game, but that's not how it gets treated, at least publicly.
Yeah.
Even all the commercials usually end with an Xbox, like, tag, so.
Yeah.
The press release that Activision sent out today said that Call of Duty Ghosts redefines the series for the next gen. The big question I want to ask you guys is, Call of Duty has been the biggest franchise this entire generation. Can it carry that momentum into the next generation?
At least for a year.
I feel like one year.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like it can't really be stopped at this point. Like, it's reached this point where it's not just a gamer's franchise. It's like, it's so cultural at this point. Like, it's in pop culture. Like, people are referencing it in movies. It was like the A-Team or something. One of the characters is like, oh, this is just like Call of Duty. And you see that stuff all the time now.
And the fact that they do gameplay reveals and stuff in the middle of, like, NBA playoffs and stuff should tell you something, that it's not just for your average person that goes home and all they do is play games.
Yeah. I mean, it like, of course, you know, there's no exception to that. There are exceptions to that rule. Like, you know, things that big can fail. But, I mean, it would take a lot for it to not dominate this next console cycle. But, you know, then again, there's so much we don't know. We don't know what games are kind of waiting the wings. We don't know what Respawn is doing, former Infinity Ward guys. See what their big game's going to be. So, yeah. I mean, like,
it's going to be going up against stuff like Destiny, right?
Yeah.
From Bungie.
Yeah. At Destiny, we got Battlefield 4. You know, the shooter franchises are definitely racking up for this new console cycle. So it's anyone's game.
What do you think, Bobby? You think you'll still be playing Call of Duty in 5 years?
I guess I won't be biased, because I'm such a big Call of Duty fan. I just think you just can't stop this. No matter how much people are going, all the naysayers are going to continue to hate on the game.
Sure.
If they come out and they show some new multiplayer footage and just blow everybody away with what the possibilities can be of this next gen, or just the game in general, I think it's just going to just build more momentum, and you're going to win over some people, and it's going to go okay. Yeah. Let's keep riding this horse.
It'll also be interesting, because this is like the first project from the reformed kind of Infinity Ward studio. I mean, they lost a lot of their talent to Respawn, so this is kind of their big like coming out party. Like,
you know, swinging for the fence,
like,
much.
So either they're going to go all out and blow us away, or, like, you know,
people are going to call them into question.
Yeah, call them into question. But I mean, hopefully it's the former and not the latter. But I mean, I think that's the bigger kind of like wait and see thing. I don't doubt that the Call of Duty franchise will prevail, but whether this game in particular will be as popular,
it'll
be interesting.
Well, thanks, guys. We expect to get a good look at Call of Duty Ghosts on May 21st at the Microsoft reveal event. You can watch the whole thing live right here on IGN with pre- and post-show analysis and very special guests. Stay tuned for that. Stay tuned for lots more GameScoop right here on IGN. Welcome back to GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. This is Greg Miller.
Hey!
That's Brian Altano. And we welcome back Levi Buchanan.
Wow. Hey there.
Former IGN editor.
Yes.
Wireless editor. Retro games editor.
Yep.
Retrocity.
Host of the podcast, Retrocity.
Yeah. We missed that show quite a bit.
I keep waiting for you guys to bring it back. Keep waiting.
Yeah.
Keep, okay then.
I don't know about that.
Finally, now when I bring up the Sega Master System, somebody will hear. I'll have something to say.
Actually, you used to have an ally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really glad Levi could join us today. I think he's going to have some interesting input to our question today. Our question today comes from Pedro. Says, hi, this question is on my mind for too long now, and I would really like to hear your opinion about it. I know there are lots of exceptions, but I have a PS3, and at the moment, I'm just using it as a Blu-ray player because the games in general are boring, even the best rated ones. Like, when I'm turning on my old 16-bit consoles too often, then something must be wrong with current games. I mean, playing a game on PS3 is kind of interacting with a movie. It doesn't give me the joy that I have when I'm playing Super Mario World or Revenge of Shinobi or even the good old Contra. While playing an old game requires you to learn the game mechanics, the levels, and the bosses, playing a current game is like just watching a story unfold with your help, secured by countless checkpoints that prevent you from doing anything wrong. The thing is, I still remember every single detail in every single level of Contra while I remember just some random cutscenes from the new Tomb Raider. This has to mean something, right? Of course, there are some recent games that I love, like Deus Ex, Human Revolution, and the new Super Mario Bros. Games, which still offer that feeling of joy while playing. Anyway, sorry for elaborating this month, but I would be very thankful if you guys could give your opinion about this. I feel like I'm the only one. Is Pedro onto something here? Are current games just not as much fun?
So there's a lot to unpack there.
Yes, the good old days.
I think that my first question is, if your 16-bit system could play Blu-rays, would you be watching Blu-rays on that more often? Because I have a feeling he's growing up, and he's growing away from games, and that's the problem more than it is. Mm. I'm using my PS3 as a Blu-ray player because these games that he's talking about, they still make them all the time. Like, just recently I've been playing Guacamelee.
Yeah.
Right? Now, Guacamelee could have come out 20 years ago, and it would have fit right in, and people would have been like, this game is incredible. And it does that now, where you're not watching movies, you're not watching cutscenes. Like, that's a very kind of pedantic way to sort of boil everything down. I don't think that that's where we are.
No,
there are games like that, but...
You're in the right... I think you're in the same vein as me, right? Like, what Pedro's talking about is the fact that, you know, I can remember everything from these old games that I used to play. Probably because that was your one game, right? And that was the one thing as a kid you could just sink your time into and do nothing but that, and your parents worried about feeding you and getting you place to place, right? Mm-hmm. And now you're an adult and you have to worry about all these different things. What Blu-rays you're going to buy.
Plus there's just so much more media, right? It's like... When you're a kid, I would get games at like Christmas, and then maybe one or two other times a year. But like now, it's just like
And you had, when you got those games, you had to love them because it was either that or go outside.
Right.
So you would sit.
No, didn't want to
do that. Why would you want to do that? Yeah. So you'd sit there and you'd play, Deadly Towers for 100 hours, and Deadly Towers sucks, but you had to love it, and it became iconic and it became part of your childhood, and that's. Part of nostalgia is when we look back at these things now and we go, it's like, how come they haven't made a movie like, Gone with the Wind or Casablanca or something? I'm like, well, they make great movies all the time, but those were like the first movies. So forever they're going to be like, there's going to be the picture of the dude from Gone with the Wind with the girl in the movie theater. And we're like,
it really made an impression on you.
Yeah. It's an iconic moment in film history and stuff like that. And like, we still have things like that, but it's just, they happen more often now, you know?
I mean, you're absolutely right, because if these retro games don't exist in a vacuum, because there's a lot of history that comes along with them. And he said that he grew up with these games, so he's already bringing a whole bunch of his personal stuff with them. You know, for me, a lot of these retro games I think about have very specific memories tied to them. I can tell you precisely what was happening the first time I played Alex Kidd. I can recreate... Well, just, sitting there with my friend Chris Bolton, long-time childhood friend... No, I was saying...
Meteor is crashing outside.
But it's a personal thing. You can recreate that scene in your head. I could draw out the room in my family, in my family's old house where the Commodore 64 is, that seminal moment. It's you cannot divorce the two. So if he was 17 and saying, hey, they don't make games like this, then I'd say, okay, now we can have a real discussion. But it is impossible to divorce... these retro games from what you bring into them personally if you grew up with them. Nostalgia is an incredibly... intoxicating thing.
Sure.
And that's for any medium. You're right when you talked about movies, imagine what people were like when movies first, the black and white, even the silent ones came out. I'm sure once, color and things like that, folks that grew up with those are like, no, they don't make movies like that anymore.
Yeah, I think that's it's a trap that a lot of people fall into, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can anyone guess who the person with, who has the hippest taste in music that I know? It's my dad, and he's like 59 years old.
Because he noticed when he was young that around 18, like, most people just stop listening to new music.
Yeah.
Like, as they go into adulthood, they listen to the music that they listened to in high school and college for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, yeah.
And never experience new music. And he was like, I don't want to be like that. So he's, like, every single day, like, scouring the internet, scouring music blogs, listening to indie radio shows and finding new bands. And he's always telling me about these new bands, like, months before they're going to blow up.
People do this with their political beliefs as well. They do it with, like, a number of things where you kind of reach a point where you're like, I'm done growing now. All the things I loved will be those
things
forever.
I'm just
going to
like these things now.
And this is me. Like, the me tree is done. It hit the top, and now you can cut little branches off here and there forever, but it's not going to grow, like, a whole extra thing, or we're not going to turn into something else. So, and I mean, in some ways, I'm glad that some game developers are stunted in that growth, because then we get games like Guacamelee.
Sure.
And you hear something like Metroidvania, which is like, we didn't have that word when we were kids because we had Metroid and Castlevania, and we never thought about that. No, they'll just keep making these forever. We don't need a name for that. They're just called games. But now you have to specify that there's that, because otherwise it's like these cinematic blockbuster games, which, you know, they are prevalent, and I think that they have their time and place. Like, I love Tomb Raider, but I love Guacamelee. Like, I want to be able to play both of those things.
Yeah.
Well, that's the beauty of the ecosystem we exist in, right? That the Blu-ray disc is usually that AAA experience, and then the PSN, Xbox Live, Steam, that's where you're seeing these great indie games where they can say, you know, we're Guacamelee, we're Drinkbox, and we want to throw back to, you know, these games of old.
There is something to be said for his description of, you know, a lot of these big games is like watching a movie unfold with your help, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm playing through Bioshock Infinite again with my girlfriend. She watches me play. She says it's just like watching a really violent Disney cartoon, you know? But I don't know if that's a bad thing.
No. I mean, that's what we want out of games, or what I want out of games, right, is I want all these different experiences. I want there to be this spectrum of things where if I want that, I can do that, and if I want something super interactive in first person, I can do that, and if I want a third person RPG, it's over there. And
I mean, that's one of the great things about this particular time in games is that we have these incredible cinematic experiences, and then we have all this great stuff that's coming up through Kickstarter or that it's on all the indie channels.
Yeah.
If you're a gamer, the breadth of content right now is astounding.
It's really awesome, and it's totally, every time I get a little worried when I'm just like, well, the business model is to make bigger and bigger games with bigger explosions and sound and everything like that, and all these companies are going out of business, they can't support that. On the flip side, there's games like Minecraft, and there's iPhone games, and there's like a game like Guacamelee, which won't sell through the roof, but it didn't cost $1 billion to make. So things like that will always sort of exist, and then especially now with Kickstarter, like, there are 16-bit games funded every single day that I think now more than ever those things are happening.
Yeah, I've been noticing this recently. You know, Levi, you have some experience with iOS games.
A decent amount.
If you look in the App Store, if you just look at like icons for games, you know how many
there's
of them
a lot of pixel art right
how
now.
How much pixel art there is. Like, it's almost getting, I love pixel art, and it's almost getting to the point where I'm like, okay, all right, that's maybe try something a little
I'm
different.
I'm not quite there yet, but yeah, I can see, I mean, there's, I think, but that goes back to what you're saying about your dad, is that, you know, he says that folks, you know, kind of solidify what they want to listen to at 18 and then don't listen to anything else. I think it, for me, at least for me personally, I still, you know, love all that stuff I listened to at 18, but I think my musical tastes have grown, but you can draw a direct line back to everything. You know, we were talking, you know, earlier about
Daft
Punk. You
can draw a
direct
line back to Tears for Fears.
Exactly.
And Depeche Mode.
Yeah, I mean, I don't all of a sudden, you know, love metal or anything like that. Everything that I like usually has a line that goes back through some of that, you know, 80s Britpop I was listening to.
Yeah.
So
I would say, Pedro, try to avoid becoming a cynical, like, grumpy gamer where you're like, oh, back in my day.
Yeah.
Well, don't make them like
nostalgia can be an awesome thing, and it can also be a very paralyzing thing.
Yeah.
And I think you're in that zone where it can be like, they don't make anything. Nostalgia can be so exclusionary, and I hope he doesn't use that as a way to shut himself off from new experiences.
Come back to the light, Pedro.
All those games you loved growing up, they still exist. Mm-hmm. You can play them whenever you want. They're still making games like that.
If they're Nintendo games, then you probably buy them 3 times a year. That's pretty much all. I still do that. I mean, I buy Super Mario Brothers every single year and everything they put it out. If it was on iPhone, I'd buy it there, and I'd be like, the controls don't. I would just always buy it, and that's just the way it is. But yeah, like we're saying, you don't ever want to become that, like, kids today, bad old guy that hates like the rock music and all the stuff going on next door. Like, never be
that
guy.
That's not a fun person to be.
No, never.
I mean, you can't really say that only the games that existed on the Master System or the NES, those are authentic video games, because, you know, we talked about this, you know, the pursuit of the authentic is just so off-putting, and so it is it's the gateway drug to being a hipster.
Yeah,
the pursuit of the authentic.
That's a good point to make. Today's surprise lightning round topic is Have you heard about this reality show that they want to make for, with the couple that they're going to send to Mars?
No.
No?
So they're...
Wait,
will you, can I explain?
Is it a young couple?
It's a... They are? Is it what?
Is it a young couple?
They are going to send a couple to Mars, and they're going to make a reality show out of finding the couple, and then it's going to be a competition, and then the two people will win, and
Oh,
then,
finding the couple on Earth.
Yeah, but then they're still going
to,
like...
I thought you meant, we're sending them to Mars, and then someone else has to go find them. That's the show.
No,
that's
no.
Crazy.
They're not going to find them, but they are sending them to Mars. It is a one-way trip. Tomorrow, someone's like electing to go die on another planet as a part of a reality TV show.
Who's sending them? Like, what? They got their own spaceship? They're doing like a Virgin Atlantic America flight.
The people organizing the show. This is like over the next 10 years. So this is gonna happen.
Prediction: this show will never ever happen. So? Never ever happen.
It's like somebody, like we all watched Truman Show and said like, yeah, that's a really interesting commentary on our reality culture. And one person is like, yes. Yeah. How can I take that?
You know, so people are going to. Like, volunteer for this.
Of course, oh yeah.
Absolutely.
I cannot
believe... So, I gotta say, maybe it's like
I'm done. I'm done living on planet Earth.
Maybe it's my inner fat dude, but the first thing I feared, I was just like, food.
That's
like, I will be there for 15 years, and I won't get all the food I love here.
I worry about my spaceship crashing into Mars.
You won't get anything. Like, food is just one of a million things.
What are they gonna do when they get there? They just get there?
They're supposed to, like, set up shop. And I guess live as long as they can.
What? This is
I like how we're all concerned about technology
it is a real thing.
And food. And the idea of being in that tight space with somebody for 20 years.
That's why they want to
that's
be a couple.
The drama.
That's called marriage.
Yeah.
So what, like, how do you feel? Like, when you blast off and then you get that first shot of Earth passing away, and you're like, ooh.
No!
I've made a huge mistake. The ship is not coming back. You're either dying en route or you're dying on planet Mars.
Yeah.
And we will presumably watch it.
I think it's incredibly fascinating. And I mean, it's really not different than there are scientific programs being set up now that are just sort of like, hey, we want to send this manned mission out. It's going to last for 20 years. We want to see how these people interact with each other. Or, hey, this might take your whole life. This is now with a camera. That's the only real difference is that it's televised for all of our perverted minds to watch because... Real life is so fucked up that we have to watch other people die.
So, Damon, when are you and I applying? Because you and I would be the perfect couple.
What? You guys would get in the ship, you would take off, and Greg would fart. And you'd be like, well, this is my forever now. Yeah.
I look forward
this
to you
is
guys
how I wanted to go.
Finally getting to Mars looking like Statler and Waldorf.
Yeah. You're terrible. Thanks for joining us today, Levi.
My pleasure, absolutely.
Stay tuned for more from IGN GameStop.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.